Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, February 22nd. I'm Dennis Hart. Welcome to another in our series of live programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capital, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, good evening. As always, it is really good to be with you again on this Monday night.
Thanks, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be here.
It was another week of intense legislative activity, and I know we say that every week, but this one was a dilly. Let's start with what seems to be an effort on the part of State House and Senate Republicans to cut down on voting in Iowa. Some might call it an effort to suppress the vote. Now, there are a lot of moves on this, a lot of moving elements. Let's start with one of them, an effort to shorten the state's early voting period by a few days. Originally, it was 11 days from 29 to 18. But Laura, I understand you and have some new information on that. There are a lot of other layers here, but let's start with that.
Yes. Well, Iowa for years had 40 days of early voting. And that's in line with a lot of states send out ballots 30 to 40 days before the election. Republicans, as part of a big election bill in 2017 that's best known for the voter ID provision, that bill shortened the early voting window from 40 days to 29. This bill, just to give you an idea, this bill hadn't even been published yet when we recorded last week's show. It was published for the first time on Tuesday morning, and by Wednesday evening, it could be on the governor's desk this Wednesday. That's how fast it's moving. But this bill would have shortened the early voting from 29 days to 18 days. Just now at 5 to 6 p.m., there was a public hearing in the Iowa House, and the House State Government Committee Chair Bobby Kaufman said that they're going to release an amendment tomorrow that makes a few small changes to the bill. And one of those is that they'll make the early voting window 21 days instead of 18. It's still very short compared to what most states provide for mailing out absentee ballots. And it's going to put a real squeeze on the hundreds of thousands of Iowans who've grown accustomed to voting early.
Now, the Republicans say it's going to address voter concerns that campaigns go on too long. But the reality is, isn't it, that the Republican Party just simply hopes that less voting time means less turnout for Democrats.
Well, every state that where Republicans control the legislature right now, there have been bills introduced to curtail early voting. And that's because we've seen in recent elections that Democrats are more likely to vote before Election Day than Republicans. Everybody knows that if Republicans voted early in larger numbers than Democrats, none of these proposals would be on the table. So, I mean, I think to say that this will shorten the campaign season is a bit ludicrous because the well-funded campaigns, thinking of Governor Kim Reynolds, her opponent Fred Hubbell, this past year, Senator Joni Ernst and her opponent Teresa Greenfield, they were on the air with saturation radio and television advertising already in June or July. So, I mean, the idea that candidates are not going to be having volunteers make phone calls. People are still going to be knocking on doors. They're still going to be doing all those things. There's still going to be all the campaign advertising for months before the election. So compressing it into a 21-day timeframe really isn't going to change very much about how campaigns are run.
Another layer of this effort that's being considered is that a bill would reduce the time that Iowans can request absentee ballots from 120 days to 70 days before an election. Talk about that.
Yes. Well, this is when Iowans can start sending in an absentee ballot request form. Current law allows that to happen 120 days before an election. So this past year, it was in early July. Actually, I've talked to some election administrators who aren't as concerned about this aspect of the bill because it would still allow 70 days for people to send in an absentee ballot request form. And that's probably a pretty good length of time. Actually, John Deeth, who is an elections worker in Johnson County, that's where Iowa City is, he mentioned that in college towns, and of course Ames would be another example, it's been a problem in the past that some people have filled out absentee ballot request forms in July, then all the leases for the students turn over on August 1st. So sometimes then they end up mailing the ballot to the wrong address. So I'm less concerned about the shorter time to request an absentee ballot than I am about the shorter turnaround time for the ballots to actually reach the voters and then be returned to the auditor.
Another part of the bill would stop Iowa's 99 county auditors from sending absentee ballot request forms to voters. Many of them did that in the last election. This bill would stop it.
Yes, and it would also, the Secretary of State last year sent out ballots to all registered voters, both before the primary and general election. And under this bill, the Secretary of State could only do that with the authorization from the legislature and could only do that in the context of a public health emergency. So presumably, we all hope that the coronavirus pandemic will not still be ongoing in 2022. But this basically would preclude the Secretary of State from doing a statewide absentee ballot request form mailing. And there's just no, I mean, there haven't been any problems reported from that. I mean, when they sent out more request forms to people, a lot more people voted early. And that was actually helpful for getting the record turnout that we saw in this election. So, I mean, that's a portion that I'm very concerned about. One small change that the original bill said that county auditors could not mail absentee ballot request forms to voters under any circumstances. Supposedly, Bobby Kaufman said today during this hearing that the amendment tomorrow is going to say that on the voter's request, the county auditor could mail a request form. So let's say I'm at home, I don't drive, I don't have a printer, and I call my county auditor's office and ask them to send me a form. Supposedly, under the amendment that we're going to see tomorrow, that would be legal for the auditor's office to send me a form under that circumstance. But there's really no harm done by universally mailing a request form to people, and I don't see the reason for doing that except to suppress the early vote, which has tended to skew a bit more toward Democrats in recent years.
Yeah, and it points, we should point out that in the past election, 80% of Democrats in Iowa voted early, as opposed to 54% of Republicans. So Democrats clearly are, without making an editorial statement on this, appear to be the target of this particular part of the bill.
Yes, and I mean, it's even more striking if you look at some other states where for many years, let's say Georgia and Florida, Republicans were more likely to vote by mail. And in fact, Republican-controlled legislatures then expanded mail voting. And this past election year was the first time that Democrats voted by mail in larger numbers than Republicans. And now we see the Republican legislatures in those states backtracking and trying to limit the early voting there as well. So it definitely seems to be part of a general strategy to reduce the Democratic turnout.
Now, this bill would also limit who can return a voter's absentee ballot.
Yes, and this is a concern for a lot of people, especially advocates for Iowans with disabilities and advocates for domestic violence survivors. Currently, under Iowa law, anybody can hand deliver your completed absentee ballot to the county elections office. Let's say you just forgot to mail it. You're concerned if you put it in the mail, it might not get there in time. A friend, neighbor, political volunteer, and this ballot chase is what the volunteers often call it, is used more heavily by Democrats than by Republicans. And under this bill, only someone in your immediate household or a caregiver could return the ballot. Now, that is something that I'm going to keep an eye on that amendment tomorrow. It's possible that they may say that a voter can authorize somebody else. But for people who are disabled, often they might ask a friend who doesn't live in their household to drop off the ballot for them. And this would be a big problem for those people. And of course, again, it's a hindrance to the campaigns who are often looking in the final days before the election. They're looking at the lists of voters who requested their ballots and haven't returned it yet. And of course, it's imperative for campaigns to try to get those supporters' ballots back.
Now, there's still more in this bill. County auditors would not be allowed to set up satellite early voting sites unless they're petitioned to do so by at least 100 eligible voters. Many auditors set those up, and now they would be prohibited from doing that.
I think this is the real tell that this is something aimed at suppressing Democratic turnout, because it's mainly the larger population counties in Iowa where they have satellite voting locations. They're often at public libraries or community centers, and they're at the same place year after year. So people have grown accustomed to voting at those locations. And I actually reached out last week to the county auditors in a number of counties that have made heavy use of those, including the Story County auditor, Lucy Martin. And she mentioned that this would be a big problem. Of course, they often have satellite voting locations on college campuses, including Iowa State, University of Iowa. I know in Des Moines, Drake University has often had a popular early satellite voting site on campus. And so now it's going to be much more difficult for auditors to manage their workflow. It's going to be inconvenient for voters. And again, they have the compressed time frame. So let's say now I'm in Polk County. Instead of voting early at a library that's fairly close to my house, I would have to drive downtown, stand in line at the county elections office. And instead of having 29 days before the election to do that, I now may have only 21 days. So there are just going to be longer lines for people who do want to exercise that early voting option. And parking is often limited in the areas where the county elections offices are compared to when they can set up these satellite voting locations in places like public libraries that usually have very large parking lots.
So another part of the bill, yes, this bill keeps going on, would strip county auditors of their home rule authority, limiting their discretion on how to run elections. What's that all about?
Well, I really wonder, and I don't know whether this will reach the Iowa Supreme Court or whether anyone would file a lawsuit, but the Iowa Constitution does say that local governments have home rule and county auditors are duly elected officials. And I just wonder, I'm not an attorney, but I wonder if that's even constitutional for the legislature to say that in this area of their work, county auditors don't have home rule, then they're subject to the whims of the Secretary of State. It also says that the Secretary of State can issue directives, binding directives on county auditors without going through the normal rulemaking process. And I just wonder about that. That seems a little bit arbitrary.
Another part of the bill would lay out new criminal charges that county elections officials could face if they violate state guidance or fail to perform election duties. In other words, auditors could go to jail.
Yes, or be fined $10,000. And this is a real concern. The Iowa Association of County Auditors has expressed, and several county auditors testified at today's public hearing about this. The goal of this is to punish the three county auditors in Lynn and Johnson and Woodbury counties who sent out pre-filled absentee ballot request forms last summer when that clearly wasn't the intention of the Iowa legislature. But the effect of this could be really far-reaching. And the Woodbury County Auditor, Pat Gill, mentioned today that if there's a mistake, just, you know, an innocent mistake in his office, right now he has county auditors have an incentive to report that mistake so that it gets corrected. But what happens in the future if they have to be thinking about, should I report this technical infraction, or is it possible that the Secretary of State is going to bring down the hammer on me and try to throw me in jail? And so you could end up having more mistakes that don't get corrected. And also you could have experienced elections workers quitting, and then they have to replace them with inexperienced people who've never run an election before. And again, you could end up having more mistakes rather than fewer mistakes.
Let's sum this all up. We've been talking for the first 13 minutes on this program about one issue here. This same effort, which appears to be an effort to suppress the vote in Iowa, is being pushed by Republicans in other states, including Arizona, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and all 33 states are considering changes to voting laws to restrict voter access. Sum this all up. Is this, I don't want to put words into your mouth, you certainly can speak on this far better than I can, simply a reaction to the fact that President Trump lost the election and Republicans are unwilling to accept it?
I think this is just an attempt by Republicans to seize political advantage. They see that there's a partisan imbalance with Democrats being more likely to vote early. And so any obstacles that they can create to voting early, I think they see is something that will benefit them in the long term. And I think it's a tell that this bill is being fast-tracked. I mean, this is a very far-reaching bill, and it's unusual in the Iowa legislature for a bill to be introduced and then in 2 days already be through committees, and now in just another couple of days be coming up on the floor, and it could be on the governor's desk. This is something that is rare. It happened when they shredded most of the collective bargaining rights in 2017. But this is not the normal legislative process, and it really speaks, I think, to a political motivation behind the bill. I should say that Republicans are very angry when people call this voter suppression. And one thing that they've been saying repeatedly, and it came up again in today's committee, is that people said that their 2017 bill was going to be voter suppression, and yet we had record turnout in 2020. And I actually looked it up last week. 42 states had record turnout in 2020. The record turnout occurred because Donald Trump activated voters on both sides of the equation. And so it wasn't because, in fact, Iowa's turnout increased by less than what most other states did. So Republicans claim it isn't about voter suppression, but clearly it's going to make it very difficult for a lot of people to cast early ballots. And we know that not everyone has the transportation or otherwise the means to get to a polling place on election day.
So this is just zooming through the state legislature. It's going to pass and be on the governor's desk in about a week. I'm talking about from the time it was introduced last week until this week. Is there any sense that the public is aware of what's going on? Is there any building concern or outrage? Anybody talking about this out there?
Well, I think there were about 1,000 written comments submitted before today's Iowa House hearing. So it's certainly getting a lot of media coverage. I think all of the major newspapers and the television stations have been covering it. I mean, it's a big deal and people recognize, you know, the Republicans it's the irony of this is that after the election, we heard a lot of Iowa Republicans say, well, you know, they had irregularities in other states, but Iowa elections were so well run and we did such a good job in Iowa. And yet, why do we then need this big overhaul if there weren't any problems in Iowa? And in fact, Republicans did very well up and down the ballot here. So that's part of it that is sort of missing from this. The governor has not come out and explicitly endorsed this bill, but I assume that she's willing to sign it. Otherwise, it's unlikely that it would be moving so quickly. I think if she had any concerns about the bill, we'd probably see that reflected in slowing down the process.
Let's take a deep breath, both of us, and let our audience take a deep breath and remind them that at 15 and a half minutes after the hour at 7 o'clock on this Monday night, you are listening to Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart. She is Laura Bellin. We are talking about what in the world is going on in the state legislature and how it impacts all of us. And our first 15 minutes here have been about voting. And that certainly impacts most of us who are listening to this. But something else going on that you were following this afternoon, just a couple of hours ago, a temporary redistricting commission started work on changing the boundaries for Iowa election districts. So tell us what's the latest on that.
Well, the redistricting process, Iowa has a unique redistricting process. A lot of people say it should be a model for the country. We have a nonpartisan process, and normally we would be much further along in this process than we are this year. The U.S. Census Bureau is very delayed in getting the data to the state. So normally our nonpartisan legislative services agency would already be working on a map, but right now they don't have the data. They're not going to have the data until September. But nevertheless, this commission that's appointed every 10 years, it's two Democrats and two Republicans. So the majority and the minority leaders in both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate each get to name one person to this commission. And then the four members each agree on, they all agree on a fifth member. They didn't decide that today. That was on the agenda today, but they postponed it to next week. But we have two Republicans, the former Iowa House majority leader, Chris Hagenow, and the longtime state budget director, Dave Roederer. And the two Democrats are Deidre Dejere, who was the 2018 Democratic nominee for Secretary of State, and Ian Russell, who's an attorney with a lot of experience in the election area in the Davenport area. So they talked about a lot of things. There were representatives of the nonpartisan legislative services agency talking about how this is going to unfold. The big question mark is, what's going to happen with missing the deadline? Because the Iowa Constitution says the legislature is supposed to approve new maps by September 1st. And it's obviously not going to happen because they aren't even going to have the data from the Census Bureau probably until later in September. So under the Iowa Constitution, the Iowa Supreme Court is supposed to assume control over the redistricting process. Several weeks ago, I sent a comment, I sent an inquiry to the judicial branch to say, hey, what is the Iowa Supreme Court thinking about how they're going to approach this? And I just got back that they don't comment on future cases that might come before them. So no one really knows how they're going to approach it. I think that one possibility is that the Supreme Court would just order the nonpartisan LSA to just draw up the map the way they normally would. It's even possible that the Iowa Supreme Court could ask the legislature to take a look at the maps and vote on it. They're not required to do that, but it's possible that the legislature could come back into a special session. But what was encouraging today was that there was no talk about tossing this nonpartisan system out the window. That's something that a lot of Democrats have been concerned about these past few years because the Republicans have full control of state government. So the concern was that they could just pass a new redistricting law and gerrymander a map and get it signed into law. And it doesn't sound like the wheels are turning in that direction. At least that wasn't apparent from today's meeting.
Okay, good news. Let's talk about something that has a whiff of scandal about it. I'm talking about Workday. The Iowa House has approved a bill for $21 million to help buy Workday, which is, you know, Laura's a cloud-based accounting system for the state. The Senate has approved it earlier. Now, Democrats have always questioned the process that Governor Reynolds used in choosing Workday without following the traditional competitive bidding process. So this is a convoluted and important story. And again, I say a whiff of scandal, perhaps. Give us the background.
So the state of Iowa is operating on an accounting and human resources system that has been going for many decades and is not supported anymore and is just very obsolete. So everyone agrees that the state needs to upgrade the system. The controversial part came when Workday was selected in 2019, as you mentioned, without going through the traditional competitive bidding process. And the two contracts that were signed with Workday are worth a combined more than $50 million. So it's really a huge amount of money. Normally, for contracts of any significant size, you do have to go through competitive bidding. Now, the excuse that we've heard from state officials is that Iowa State University, they selected Workday around 2015. They used competitive bidding. And then following that, the Iowa Department of Transportation selected Workday. And so the state officials have claimed that they didn't really need to go through the whole bidding process because this had already been screened by other entities. The governor came to the legislature last year and asked for a $21 million appropriation to fund part of this contract. And the legislators said no. And then COVID-19 happened, and the state got a huge $1.2 billion through the Federal CARES Act. And so the governor decided to apply some CARES Act money toward the Workday contract. And what's one thing that's disputed about this is the governor's office has claimed that they were told by the federal officials that this would be fine last summer. I have not been able to confirm that. The U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Inspector General told me that they never gave any assurances. They don't have any documentation that anyone at the Treasury Department gave assurances. So if it happened, maybe it was in a verbal conversation, but I can't find any evidence of that. But in any case, the state and federal auditors told the governor this past fall that that this was not an appropriate use of coronavirus relief funds. So the governor had to give that money back. And that's why now she has needed to come to the legislature and say, give us the $21 million for Workday. And the Republicans in control of the Senate and House, although they weren't keen on funding this contract last year, now this year they were willing to do it in a sense to get the governor out of a jam. I mean, we're committed to the contract. So we were potentially going to be in default of the contract if there wasn't a special appropriation for this.
Meanwhile, Iowa State has fallen behind. The state university I'm talking about, ISU, has fallen behind in a key reporting metric because of Workday, right?
Yes. I mean, this is one of the controversial things about Workday. Iowa State had years bringing the system online, and they were planning to start using it for finances in 2018. This was pushed back to 2019 to give them time to train more staff. And so it was brought online for the use for accounting in July of 2019. And now the ISU has still not completed its year-end financial reporting that it normally sends to the state agencies by October 1st. This would have been October 1st of last year. They still haven't sent that data to the state. And so the state of Iowa has been unable to publish its what's called a comprehensive annual financial report. It's an obscure thing, but it's very important for the bond markets and for people who pay attention to state finances. Normally, that's out by December 31st, and it's still not published, and the holdup is coming from Iowa State. Now, I had reported on this earlier this month, and Iowa State had told me that they were going to be able to complete sending all their financial data to the state by February 15th. But I learned on Friday that the process still is not complete. And now they're saying that maybe by February 26th. But again, this is basic. It's concerning that if Iowa State is having so much trouble getting the financial data out of this Workday system, what's going to happen when the entire state government moves on to Workday? Right now, it's slated to happen in 2022. It's concerning.
You'll be watching it. The state house has passed a bill that would give school districts $27 million in additional funding based on how many days of in-person learning they offered. Now, here's the tricky thing, and you can talk about this. The bill, in effect, punishes school districts in Iowa that opted for remote or hybrid learning.
Yes. I mean, I watched the Iowa House debate on this, and it was really quite striking. I mean, The assumption behind this bill is that the only school districts that had extra expenses related to the pandemic were those providing in-person instruction, which is kind of a strange assumption because the school districts that were offering hybrid or fully remote learning, many of them had huge expenses on laptop computers or tablets for students who didn't have them. Many districts invested in mobile hotspots or internet connectivity for some of their students. They upgraded their online, and they had extra training costs for teachers to work online. I mean, there were just a number of costs. Many of these districts were still providing free lunches for people, even when the schools were not meeting in person. So they really did have a lot of expenses. And yet this bill would not give the districts credit for that, in a sense. So, and also, a lot of people objected that the districts who were doing the hybrid instruction, that was fully compliant with the state Department of Education's guidelines. I mean, in the Senate, there was a similar bill that would punish the Des Moines Public Schools, which was operating on a fully remote basis for a couple of months last fall. But this bill would also punish the districts that were doing the 50-50 hybrid option, which was compliant with what the governor was allowing and the state was allowing. So, I mean, that was a real concern. And during the debate, a number of Democrats stood up and talked about specific school districts and how much money that they were going to lose out on. And yet they had a lot of costs associated with the pandemic. So, I mean, there was a Democratic proposal to equalize those payments per school district, and that failed.
Laura, we have about 3 minutes left, and you've been working on a story about Stephen Leith, of course, the former president of Iowa State University, who left rather quickly and under some controversy. What's been going on with Mr. Leith since he left Iowa State?
Well, it's interesting. He left Iowa State for Auburn University. He signed a five-year contract there. And then 2 years into his five-year contract, the Auburn Board of Trustees, and he basically agreed to part ways. And the full story never came out about that. It was a I think there was some kind of non-disclosure agreement, but they paid him $4.5 million just to walk away from the final 3 years of the contract. So a lot of people were surprised to see that. So he is now, this is going to be the final year that he's going to get a $1.5 million payment. He was only getting paid about $600,000 a year. That was his base salary at Auburn. And yet he's getting paid $1.5 million a year to walk away. So he had been, I think, looking for some other university positions, but he didn't land in another university job. Instead, President Trump had appointed him to the National Science Board, and it was announced this past fall that Stephen Leith is now the executive director of the Council to Advance Hunting and the Shooting Sports. That's a nonprofit that promotes hunting. That's something that obviously Stephen Leith had a lot of interest in. It was known that he was, it was one of the things that he was using his Iowa State's plane for, was to go on hunting trips, and in some cases take donors to the university on these hunting trips, sometimes also taking friends of his on these hunting trips.
And briefly remind us about the Iowa State plane. That was a heavy controversy for a period of time.
Yes, that took up a lot of my headspace in late 2016, early 2017. Stephen Leith, he was a private pilot, so he had arranged for the university to purchase a separate plane for his use. And there were allegations that he had used that dozens of times for personal trips rather than university business. And he also, there were questions about his use of the university airplane that Iowa State had had for a long time, which is a larger, slightly larger jet plane, the King Air. There were allegations that he had used that as well for sometimes personal medical travel, sometimes some vacation, one case picking up his relatives on the way to the NCAA Sweet 16 game. So that was, I will tell you, that was a really fun story to investigate. And it's something that, you know, it was cut short when he left for Auburn. So I guess we'll never know what happened at Auburn to hustle him out the door there.
Laura, 30 seconds. What's coming up on the agenda this week in the legislature?
Well, the big news is going to be this voting bill, but it's also possible the abortion amendment may still get the final step. There's probably going to be some more work on education funding as well. And just, I mean, there are so many different moving pieces now. There's a deadline for bills to get out of committee on March 4th. And so a lot of legislation is moving very quickly right now. But the House has passed dozens of bills already. And I think that they're probably looking to try to get out of town sooner rather than later. So I expect a pretty busy week, but the election bill is going to be the biggest news.
And we'll talk about that next Monday night. Laura Bellin, thank you very much for being with me tonight. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. Coming up next, Iowa Congresswoman Cindy Axne addressing the Iowa Farmers Union. Laura and I will be right back here next Monday night at 7 with a look at what makes news in the Iowa State Legislature this week and what it means for all of us. Until then, thank you for the privilege of your time and good night.